Welcome to another edition of the 51%, Conversations with Creative Women. I'm Sandy Klein. Water plays a significant and important role in the life of Amanda Krauss. In the mid-90s, when she was at UMass Amherst, she was spotted by members of the school's crew team, who persuaded the tall, athletic freshman to try out for rowing. Although a novice, she took to it, like fish to water, and she wound up a convert. Amanda rowed for 4 years, then went on to Harvard, where she received a master's from the School of Ed. She taught, coached, and worked in nonprofits, including a Boston rowing program for disadvantaged inner-city girls, an experience that really impacted her life. Krauss said she thought the marriage of competitive rowing with an underserved population was amazing, so amazing, in fact, that in 2002, she founded Row New York. She started with $50 and tremendous support and encouragement from her then-boyfriend and now husband. And it was Amanda's former UMass coach who donated the first two boats. During that inaugural summer, all of 8 girls signed up. But that didn't deter Amanda. She kept at it, raising money and recruiting athletes. Today, Krauss oversees a full-time staff of 18 and 20 part-timers who, over the years, have provided new opportunities and challenges for thousands of middle and high school students, first girls and now boys. Row New York also provides academic support, financial information, and organizes college visits. 98% of the graduates who participate in the year-round program have gone on to college, the majority on scholarship. Rowers also compete in an average 12 races a year in the Northeast and Mid-Atlantic. The competitive team has medaled at the New York State Championship for the past 4 years. In addition to competitive rowing, the program offers summer camps and sessions for disabled children and adults. All the action takes place on Meadow Lake in the borough of Queens and the Harlem River in Upper Manhattan. Oh, one more thing. Amanda was named a 2012 Community Leadership Award winner by the President's Council on Fitness, Sports, and Nutrition. The honor is presented every year to no more than 50 individuals nationwide and recognizes their efforts to improve the lives of others. I had a lot to say about you, Amanda. Welcome.
Well, thank you. Thanks for having me here. You did your homework.
I sure did. And there was a lot of homework to do because this is really pretty impressive. And it begs the first question. Did you, in your wildest dreams, ever imagine that this idea would morph into something really so huge and so potent?
I don't think I imagined it would become as large as it has and impacting as many lives as it actually has and is right now. No, I don't think I imagined that.
How did you know what to do? Can you take us through that steps from the moment that the light bulb went off until, you know, today?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think the short answer is I didn't exactly know what to do. What I did know was that I had seen a program like Row New York working in Boston while I was in graduate school, and I was so inspired by the young people, the young women I worked with back in, you know, 99, 2000. And I saw this working and I thought, you know, I wanted to come back to New York City. I'm originally from New York City. And I thought, well, if it's possible, then why can't it be possible in New York City? I mean, how hard could it be?
Really?
Your famous last words, right? Mm-hmm.
Well, we do have bodies of water.
Right.
I mean, that's a start.
That's what I figured. I thought, you know, I know how to row. I know a little bit of, I know some about coaching. I've been coaching a bit. And we have bodies of water. And so, you know, how hard could it be? And so it was much harder than I thought it would be. Mostly because there was no infrastructure here in New York City for a rowing program, much less an outreach rowing program. So unlike a city like Boston or Philadelphia, where there were already, you know, thriving rowing organizations and clubs where we could just sort of insert ourselves within an already established club.
Because there are crew teams in all these schools and they practice on the Charles River, for example.
Right. So you could go in and say, listen, I want to add a new piece to what you're already offering. You already have a boathouse. You have boats. You have launches and engines and coaches and equipment and insurance. Let me just, you know, put myself in here with a small program. So it was really the opposite of that because there was no infrastructure. So it was, you know, so where do we start? So I you know, to answer your question is we were living in the East Village at the time, and I just bought a huge piece of poster board and just started writing down, well, what are all the things you need to do? We need to incorporate. We need to become an organization. I didn't know how to do that, but I knew it needed to be done. We needed to get nonprofit status from the IRS. Didn't know how to do that. Just needed know it needed to be done, or knew it needed to be done. I needed to raise money. Didn't know how to do that. But I knew we'd need money. And, you know, I literally went out and bought one of those books, The Fundraising for Dummies, which I've since taken off my shelf in my office because I just, you know, that's a little embarrassing.
Well, your secret's safe with us.
Thank you. You know, just sort of wrote this long list. Oh, find somewhere to row. That was an important piece, too.
But I have to interrupt and ask. I mean, it's great to have a poster board and start writing these things. And it's wonderful to have a significant other who is supporting you.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe I'm speaking for a lot of other women with great ideas, but just who feel so overwhelmed by the task at hand. You've got a fabulous idea. And how do you sell it to me or to the next person? And were you prepared to put in some of your own money?
I guess it's a two-part question, a two-part answer. Yes, I had saved, I think, about $5,000 from my lucrative, you know, not lucrative teaching job. But I had sort of stashed that away and decided, well, then I could live for a couple months. You know, when you're young and you don't have kids or a mortgage or anything, it's, you know, you're like, oh, we'll make some more pasta. And so I decided I would grant myself that time to live off of that money and try to make this work. And if it didn't, then it wouldn't. Then it didn't. But I was going to try to start this organization. And you know, it's sort of like stepping off a cliff a little bit. That you know, when you establish, I'm going to try to do this, and you sort of make that public. I think that was not public, but with your family and your friends.
And they were supportive as well?
Oh, yeah. You know, it's a great idea. And I still have notes from people from 11, 12 years ago from friends and family saying, you know, you can do this, and like words of encouragement. But it was a real risk. It felt like a real risk to take professionally and personally, you know, because if you announce that you're going to try to do something, it becomes this public effort. And, you know, you put yourself out there to maybe not be successful. So in terms of, I think you had asked, sort of how do you do this? Like, how do you take this risk? I think you either do or you don't, right?
Right.
And so I did.
So you said I should incorporate, or I'm a nonprofit, whatever, you know, all those little details. And then, first of all, you said you had no place to call home in terms of this project. How did you convince people? I mean, I don't need every single step, but how did this fly?
Well, that was the funny part, is convincing people, because I would sit and I would, you know, get meetings with people. Trying to even think of how I would just go to anything that had anything to do with rowing, or no, there was no rowing. So on water activities, mm-hmm. I would, you know, I picked up the phone and called rowers in New York City who were maybe 10 years older than I was and established in New York City, and pitched this idea to them. And then they would introduce me to more people. And, you know, it was sort of like fake it till you make it a little bit, because in a meeting, when I finally would get meetings with them, I would talk with confidence, or try to talk with confidence, about this idea that I had, and it's going to be very successful, and I really believe in it. But in the back of my mind, I was thinking, oh, God, I'm not actually sure that this is going to
work. It's almost like play acting. Almost.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, this is going to be great, and I know it's going to work. And, you know, I wouldn't call it lying, but in the back of my mind, I remember thinking, feeling like dread.
Was a turning point the fact that your former coach gave you the first two boats? What was the biggest push forward?
No, that was almost more frightening, because it's kind of hard to describe. But I think when people actually start to believe in the idea and they give you a little bit of something, like a boat or a grant for $10,000, it was one of our first grants. It's almost more, it's exciting, but it's also frightening, because then you think, wow, I really actually have other people. Exactly. And I have other people invested in this idea now. So I can't just sort of tuck it back. Oh, just kidding. I'm not really doing this. Like, people are investing in this idea. And so you really need to then do something with that. So when he dropped off these two boats in New York City, it was great, but it was also sort of frightening that, wow, now we have to.
Are you still basically doing this by yourself, collecting the money, pitching the idea?
Oh, no, not at all.
No, then.
Oh, I mean, then. Oh, then. Sorry. Then. Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yes, it was me.
So move ahead. You get $10,000. You get these two boats. How do you determine where you're going to store them and where this project is going to be located?
My husband, who was my boyfriend at the time, has always been an amazing life partner, and he was totally on board with the idea. In fact, he's the one who really pushed and pushed and pushed and said, you know, you absolutely should do this. And there's a little bit of a story there in that he's the one, you know, when we first moved to New York City and I was had the idea of Row New York in my mind, and but I, you know, I wasn't sure if it was the right thing to do because I thought, well, this is going to be hard. We don't have any money. Personally, there's no money for this idea. There's no seed funding for this. And, you know, I want to work at this organization. I don't necessarily want to start it and
run it. I understand.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so it was him, you know, he said, that's sometimes the problem with women.
Hmm.
And I, you know, of course, I got very defensive. And what are you talking, you know?
Yeah, what are you talking about?
You jerk. but he said, you know, men have this arrogance and this confidence that women don't have. And you should have more of it. You know, you should want to do this. And but I don't want to do this. You know, it was this sort of very personal back and forth. And he said, no, women are so much more capable. I want to sort of describe this correctly. He was really just talking about how men don't have, and of course this is a generalization, but in his thought process, he was saying, listen, men plow forward with ideas and this confidence and this arrogance. And sometimes that's a good thing. Sometimes it's not, but
right.
Sometimes it's a good thing. And women too often hold them back. Oh, it's too hard. I won't be able to do it.
I'll fail.
Yeah, I'll fail. This won't work. I don't know how to do these things. He said, you know, you that's the problem. You should say I can do this and I want to do this and I'll figure it out.
I think we're so worried that we're going to make a mess.
Yeah, and we're going to, and it's not going to work. And so it's better to just say, well, you know, no, it's okay. I'm not going to do this. And so I got a little bit angry, and sometimes that's a good thing, you know, and in my own head, and I decided, no, you know, kind of screw that, I am going to do this, and I'm so glad that we had that conversation looking back, because I think it really ended up being good encouragement for me to
mm-hmm.
say, no, you know, he's a little bit right, and in my opinion, and I'm going to do this,
and he turned out to be a lot of bit right.
Yeah, he did. He did. I'll give him that.
Yeah, that's all right. Yeah, throw him that bone.
I will. So he went with me. So I said, okay, so this weekend we're going to drive around New York City and we're going to look at every body of water and try to figure out where to row. And it was after many hours of driving around, probably over a course of a couple of days, that we ended up at Meadow Lake in Queens and decided that this was a great spot because it's somewhat protected. You know, it's not being out on the exposed on the Hudson River. You know, it's certainly in a community that could use access to unique sports or activities and lots of schools around it. And there was actually a building, sort of a boathouse, from the World's Fair that was located right next to the lake. So I was thinking, this is perfect. This could be perfect. We'll clean this building out, and this could be our boathouse. And
what'd you do, rent the building eventually?
No, so we approached, or I approached the Parks Department and, you know, and said, listen, I want to take kids who can't swim in these narrow boats out on the Parks Lake and teach them to row. And somehow they said yes,
wow.
You know, which was a big... You know, that was cause for a bottle of champagne, getting that permission from the Parks Department, because to me, I think it was a big ask, you know,
mm-hmm.
in terms of liability and exposure. But that was huge, you know, that they said, yeah, you can use this rundown old building. You know, it's filled with garbage. And they even said yes when I said, well, do you think you could give us some dumpsters and we'll fill them up? And because it was filled with car parts and squirrels and squirrel families. And so that was a process, too, and getting friends to come and help load dumpsters on weekends. There were just a lot of hurdles is the best way to describe
it. So you've got a place now.
Right.
And we don't have to go every step of the way, but from the time that your husband really pushed you till the time that you cleaned out that building was about how long, would you say?
About a year.
A year. So it took a year for you to get your first boat on the water.
Yeah, I would say so. And, you know, that year included also trying to get people board, you know, build a board and apply for nonprofit status with the IRS and start to create, you know, materials that I could share with potential funders.
You're running from pillar to post. It's just...
Right, right.
As you were doing all of this and
I cried a lot.
Okay, but you're also getting good feedback because things are happening in a positive level. Were you also, no pun intended, buoyed by this?
There were not a ton of positive moments, to be honest. I mean, getting permission to use the boathouse is an example of
that's
a positive
big.
Moment.
Yeah,
yes. No, that was big. I think there were more negative moments, you know, than it took like 2 months to get the actual key from the Parks Department to get into the actual building, you know, a lot of rejection from foundations and just thinking, this is so ridiculous. This idea is ridiculous. This is impossible, you know, where we have to get to from here is just seemed very impossible at times. So it was very slow going. It was a big lift and slow going for that year.
So when that year was over, you had 8 girls.
Uh-huh.
2 boats.
Uh-huh.
I feel like saying in a partridge in a pear tree.
Right, right. 8 girls,
and,
yes.
And did you have coaches, mentors? I mean, how many staff were there at that point, whether they were paid or not? But how many people besides you and your boyfriend were involved?
Right. So, and he had a job, keep in mind. So he couldn't come out and coach. So luckily, I don't know how she found us, but a wonderful woman, young woman named Emily Auchincloss, and she had rowed in college, and we got connected somehow, and she, you know, said, I want to help you run this pilot program for the summer. That was the summer of 2002. And I said, yeah, that would be amazing. So she came out for that whole, you know, 4 or 5 weeks that we did this pilot program and slogged through with me. And, you know, I will forever be grateful for her help with that. And we're still, you know, in touch to this day. But besides Emily, that was it. You know, it was just us.
And it was 8 girls from Queens?
Mm-hmm.
You found by going to the schools or?
No, so it was during the
kidnapping.
Summer. Yeah, we took them off. Yeah, we were like,
oh, right.
Oh, wanna come row? No, so we went to the YMCA in Flushing and asked them, you know, listen, we have this pilot. Do you have some girls who might be interested? And they said, well, not from the Y, but we have this Beacon Center, which is like 4 miles from here. So I was living in the East Village, and our car was parked on the west side, along the West Side Highway for some reason. I've kind of blocked all of this out. But I remember there's no, like, great train, as I'm sure you know, like from the East Village to the
West Side.
Mm-hmm. So I would jog over and get the car, and then I would drive to the Upper East Side from downtown to pick Emily up, because I said, the least I can do since you're volunteering is pick you up. And then we would go across to Queens, and we would park my car at the YMCA and take the van that they let us use. I can't believe they even let us use that van, thinking back. And then we would drive to Whitestone to the Beacon Center and pick the girls up. So that was like 2 hours and 15 minutes in.
Oh, my goodness.
And then we would drive to the boathouse and run this, you know, the learn to row session with these girls and then do everything in reverse.
This was every day?
Yeah, Monday through Friday for like 4 or 5 weeks. It was about 5 hours of commuting.
And these were girls who didn't know what they were getting into.
No idea.
And when the summer was over, you had, just like you, 8 converts, right?
No. I wish, you know what? I wish if I could say yes if you want me to, but the honest, but I wouldn't be telling the truth. The honest answer is, the pilot program was not amazing. It was hot. It wasn't it was unbelievably hot. We would hose the girls off at the end of the row because it's just this, like, the blazing sun in the middle of the day, because by the time we got to the boathouse, you know, it was like 10:30. You know, I think that they liked me and they liked Emily and they enjoyed the experience a little bit, but the boats that we had were 4-person rowing shells, so they're definitely not ideal for novices. It's the type of boat you row once you
are more experienced.
Exactly, or more experienced. So it was, I think some of them were scared. It was hot. It wasn't good. You know, it was not good. And I would come home sunburned and exhausted every day and just say, this is basically a disaster. Like, there were still like squirrels everywhere. It's really
probably
hot.
Laughing at you.
Yeah, probably. I'm like, this is terrible. Uh-huh. You know, it was not good. But, you know, what was good is that we took some pictures of the summer program. We got some quotes from the girls. I was able to go back to Funders that fall and say, you know, all sunburned and exhausted and even more broke, and say, listen, we're doing it and it's going. Look, we have boats. We have, you know, so I think people respected the fact that I wasn't throwing the towel in and saying, well, this is ridiculous. Like, I'm going to go to law school now or something.
Right.
So I know the good came out of it. But I would not say that the girls from that program were converts. So I think they were like, that was really hot.
So 8 became what the next year?
Right. So then that next spring, we started the full program. So the full after-school competitive program with about 15 girls. And that grew to 30, to the next year to 60, to 80. Then we stayed at 60 to 80 for a few years.
For this was just the summer program?
No.
No,
sorry. This is year round after school, Monday through Friday and Saturday mornings, as well as the academic program.
And these are girls who just were from neighborhoods where this would just never be an option.
Right, exactly. So we target schools in under-resourced communities that really serve students who, like you said exactly, Sandy, wouldn't otherwise have this opportunity. Once we partner with these schools, we know we're getting the students that we would like to serve, our target students.
So after you sort of had to kidnap these girls,
yeah,
at some
much.
Point, word got out, and
yeah.
you didn't have to recruit, as it were, or convince.
Well, you know, to this, I think we will always have to recruit. The difference is now, so the joke is still, and I'm still very close with these, the girls from who started in the full program in 2003, who are now young women, really, with jobs, and they're college graduates. And I still think of them as 15. They always laugh at me. Amanda, you know, I'm 25. I got engaged. Like, no, you're
right,
15.
Right, I don't have a curfew.
Yeah, you're 15. You have to go home. Once we got those girls, the funny thing is we had quote-unquote tryouts, and we actually decided, well, we should have 2 days of tryouts just in case we have too many girls showing up, and we'll spread them out across 2 days. And we had 5 girls the first day and 3 girls the next day. And, you know, the joke is, of course, they all made the team.
Right.
And, you know, they were so excited. Like, I was so excited when I learned that I made the team and I'd been chosen. And I think they all know now, you know, the truth is out now, many years later, that if you had a pulse and you were a
and
part
who cares?
Of New York. Yeah.
And it doesn't matter at all.
And they were phenomenal. They were wonderful.
I just think that part of it is just so amazing that you went from tears and defeatism. Because it could also have not flown. Success stories are wonderful, but there are a lot of failure stories,
right.
not for lack of trying.
Right.
I watched some videos of testimonials from these young women, and it really gives you pause.
Yeah,
I mean, because there are no stars in rowing. Mm-hmm. Everybody has to pull their weight. You know, you lag behind, you screw everybody up in the boat. What a wonderful lesson to teach these young women that we're all in this together.
Right.
You screw up, you're going to ruin it for everybody.
Right. It's good stuff.
I mean, sure is.
Yeah. Yeah. It's very easy. I mean, it's so much of it applies to life, right? Whether it's school or family or community. So much of rowing and what you learn through the sport.
But the other thing that I was struck by in doing more reading is this is just not about rowing. I mean, how the hell did you get into the whole academic thing and financial information about college? You know, what were you taking on here?
Yeah.
And did you ever think you were going to be doing that?
Definitely. Because, you know, well, because my background is in education, right? Remember, I was at Harvard's Ed School when I started working with Girls Row Boston. And I was very invested in that piece from the beginning and the academic side of things. You know, it's rowing is wonderful and it teaches a million great lessons and gets you ridiculously fit. But if you're failing math and you score a 320 on your verbal section of the SAT, no matter how well you're rowing or how much you learn from it, we're still going to have some issues in terms of getting into college and being successful later on.
Did these young women think they were going to college?
You know, many of them do. Many of them come in saying, I absolutely want to go to college. Many don't feel that way when they start with us. Some make this leap from, you know, I want to go to college, but I'll stay here in New York City too. Well, I want to have that experience where I'm at a school out of state or upstate or where I have the full dorm experience and you know, realizing what opportunities are out there for them. So the academic piece has always been important and one that we've been.
So it was just a natural outgrowth that you were going to get involved in more aspects of these girls' lives.
When you're a part of Row New York, you know, just as you need to come to practice and work hard and get your blade in the water on time and with everybody else, you also need to turn in your report cards and come to academic tutoring sessions and go to the college prep sessions. It's a package deal.
Holy cow. And so you have all these professionals who are helping them navigate them along that way, too.
Right. And we have a wonderful staff that does all of that.
When and why did boys get involved?
You know, the program I work for in Boston, Girls Row Boston, was obviously a girls-only program. You know, so I loved that model and wanted to bring it to New York City and really felt like, you know, there were few opportunities for kids from under-resourced communities, but fewer for girls, fewer opportunities in terms of, especially in terms of sports and being outdoors. And So we were very invested in the girls-only program for 9 years. And it's sort of a long story, but when we were asked by New York Restoration Project, they're the owners, that's Bette Midler's nonprofit, and they're the owners of the Manhattan Boathouse. And they asked us in 2008, listen, can you come in and take over management of the Peter J. Sharp Boathouse? And can you run all the great programs that you run in Queens? Can you run them here in Manhattan? We said, absolutely. That process took a little bit of time to get in there.
At that point, you were not necessarily thinking about expanding. You were very content to be in Queens.
Right. And we decided, though, that in taking over management of that boathouse, now we would be the only youth rowing organization in New York City that we really needed to and wanted to. We were happy to do it to serve boys as well. And, you know, it's funny, the one question I had to present to the board of NYRP, present Row New York to them for their final approval. And Bette Midler only asked me one question, and she asked, so what do you know about boys? You know, how's that going to go? And I sort of didn't know how to answer that.
Well, but you said I live with one.
I do live with one. I live with two now because we have a son.
I'm an expert.
Yeah, I know all about them. The boys have been wonderful. They're sweet and they work hard. And, you know, it's been our pleasure to serve the boys, too.
So what's your operating budget?
This year it's about $2 million.
And this comes from donations and fundraising?
About 50% comes from foundations, mostly in New York City, and about 25% comes from individual donations of generous people. We have donors who've given gifts as large as $250,000 down to $10, you know, and a lot of people in between.
Mm-hmm.
And then we generate some revenue, too, through adult Learn to Row sessions on the weekends.
You charge people for that.
Right, mm-hmm. Exactly. And then we do corporate team building. So we have groups come out. We've had Goldman Sachs and BuzzFeed and other groups come out, and they learn to row with us as a corporate team building experience. So
you have some pretty Tony board of director members.
We do.
Was that difficult to do, to go to fancy white-collar law firms or whatever? Or were people just, once this thing got off the ground, eager to be a part of it?
It is
was
difficult.
It, a hard sell?
It was difficult in the beginning. It's certainly less difficult now. I remember when we used to have site visits, which is when a funder, you know, comes to the actual boathouse and sees the program, I used to want to throw up. I would be so nervous. You know, is everything going to go well? And just, you know, not feeling great about things. But now I'm always so excited when people come to the boathouse because it sells itself. You know, you meet our staff, you meet our kids, you see things running smoothly.
Everything takes place in both of those boathouses, in other words.
Right, right. But now, you know, what if I'm going into a law firm or a big bank and meeting with someone, I'm really not uncomfortable. I'm excited about it because I know that this works and the proof is in the pudding. And
really?
And I think that people get excited. You know, people who are successful understand what success looks like and what's involved. And so when you can sit down and say, these are our numbers, these are our results, especially when they've been rowers themselves, you know, at Princeton or Yale or Harvard, and they realize, you know, you're preaching to the choir in terms of talking about rowing and how much the sport has to offer. So it's not a hard sell.
So throw some more numbers out at me. How many people have participated in this program since its inception?
Oh, we've had thousands go through our many different programs. Our core program of middle schoolers and high schoolers, that's 6 days a week, we have 220 kids on the water every afternoon. So those are our core kids. You know, we know all of those kids.
But
and their
that's
families.
Not, I mean, you don't do that in December.
We're not on the water in December, but we're with them in December. So they're in our indoor space doing rowing on the rowing machines. We do swim lessons. We're doing academics. So we don't say, see you in March. I mean, we train throughout the winter.
Terrific.
But then we also do school day adaptive rowing for kids with disabilities. And then we do summer camps. We partner with other youth serving organizations. We hire our oldest kids to help as counselors.
Wonderful.
Or as coaches. So they get work experience, mm-hmm. and some money. And then we have, you know, hundreds of kids come through these camps during the summer. We also work in certain middle schools with high rates of obesity that usually don't have gyms. So we'll bring the rowing machines in and run their PE classes in the wintertime. We'll do a unit for them. And we also work in a juvenile detention center where we'll bring rowing machines in and run their PE class as well.
Look, Amanda, this just begs the question. Did you ever in a million years think that you would be spitting all this information out today?
I don't think so. No, I was not very confident going into all of this. Definitely not. You know, to be honest, I wish I could say, yes, I knew this would work and this would be great and it would be – no, I was not that. That's not how I thought. But I think I'm very stubborn in some ways. And, you know, my mom – I have to talk about my mom. My mom very early on said, this is the perfect thing for you to be doing, Amanda, because you're so driven and so stubborn if you really want to make this maybe stubborn isn't the right word, but if you really
– Determined.
Yeah. I mean, if you really want this to happen – you know, I'm very good at putting my blinders on and not being deterred too easily.
I hope you're really proud of yourself.
Oh.
And you should be for
so nice.
Spawning this amazing organization. Has anybody called you up to start a row Charleston or
oh, gosh.
A row, you know, Maryland or whatever?
Yes, yes. People do ask a lot, and that's something we're thinking about a lot is, you know, how can you scale this idea? Can you
franchise it almost?
Yeah, it's a tricky question because I think there are a lot of things that we do that are very straightforward in terms of how to make a successful program. And then I think there's some nuanced pieces that I think you really need to be hands-on with at our staff. The things that make our staff really special are sort of nuanced. It's hard to describe.
Well, I just think what you do is so admirable, so wonderful.
Oh,
and it was
you.
Truly my pleasure to talk with you today. I don't know that you're necessarily going to see me at one of your boathouses.
Yeah,
rowing,
I was going to say, you should come out.
Well, I'm athletic, but I'm a bit of a whiner. I don't know if I could pull my weight, but I certainly applaud the efforts. I think it's just a fabulous organization.
Oh, thank you so much.
Join us for another edition of the 51% Conversations with Creative Women. And if you want to reach the 51%, contact us at advertising@51%conversations.com. I'm Sandy Klein.
Thanks for listening to the 51% Conversations with Creative Women. For show comments and suggestions, please follow us on Twitter at Sandy Klein Show. You can also find us on Facebook at the 51% Conversations. The show is produced and recorded by Chad Dugatz at the Hangar Studios in New York City. Sandy Klein is our executive producer.